Hi, this is Dr. Ronald Hoffman. If you happen to be on a weight loss regimen, studies show that as fat cells shrink, they release stored toxins into the system that can actually poison metabolic pathways and slow your metabolism, causing your weight to plateau even in the face of stringent diet adherence. That's why I've created the Intelligent Medicine Detox Protocol, a collection of carefully curated supplements to mobilize toxin elimination, easing the blahs that sometimes compromise your dietary resolve. The Intelligent Medicine Detox Protocol is an easy way to get the exact combination of the targeted nutrients you need. Just go to drhoffmanstore.com for more information and to purchase. Plus, you'll find easy-to-follow links to our heart health and immunity protocols and much more. And for a limited time, you'll get free shipping on all of your store orders. For more details, just go to drhoffmanstore.com. That's drhoffmanstore.com. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, today with Layla Mutin, who's our nutritionist in residence. And it's our weekly Q&A with Layla. Layla, what's our next question? By the way, radioprogram@AOL.com is the destination for questions. These questions come to us via email. And what is our next listener want to know about?
We've got a question from Deb. Deb says, it looks like I need something to lower my LDL. I'm taking pro-omega LDL. I'm taking polycosinol. As advised by my doctor, but this isn't helping. And here are Deb's numbers. Her total cholesterol.
Hold on.
Yeah.
What doctor still prescribes polycosinol?
I know,
because
I haven't seen polycosinol prescribed for at least 12 years.
I thought it was sort of from the Duran Duran era, you know?
Yeah. It's like, hey, I like the Duran Duran era, but polycosinol doesn't work.
You're an 80s kid, but, this is a polycosinol is a derivative of sugar cane, which is something that they just have a lot of in Cuba. And one of the big problems that Cuba's experienced is, what do they do with all that sugar cane? Now the United States has had a sugar embargo on Cuba. Plus, the United States and many other countries are now rely on other sources for their sugar, like corn for high fructose corn syrup and beets. And so, Cuban economy, what are they going to do with all that sugarcane? Well, they try to develop a product that lowers cholesterol. And this is a product of Cuban ingenuity and science. And, I got to say, they're a very, very enterprising country. And the science is pretty decent. They have, pretty good medical system in the sense that, a lot of Latin American countries don't have really good medical system. They have good doctors that they ship all over the world as sort of ambassadors of Cuban goodwill. So the science is not horrible down there, even though it's kind of a back, I don't want to use the word, the S word country, as our president sometimes alludes to countries.
I like all those 1950s model cars.
Right. But, so they came up with this thing, which is polycosinol, which is, they showed dramatic efficacy in lowering cholesterol. So a lot of people embraced it, and they said, this is great. The natural product lowers cholesterol. So they did the same research in Scandinavia, where they don't, the last time I checked, there's not a lot of sugarcane production in Scandinavia. So probably, once the snow clears in June, there's not a lot of growing season for the sugarcane until the first snows come in September.
What are you doing in May? I'm going skiing. Okay.
Right. It's in the sugarcane fields. So anyway, the researchers used the same material. They even used the Cuban material and did the research under rigorous conditions in Scandinavia, and it just didn't work. So I've never seen it work. I think I've decried this, thing for a long time. So this is a long way, roundabout way of saying is that polycosinol is of no value, in my opinion, for lowering cholesterol. So anyway, keep going with that question.
So Deb's numbers, because now her doctor wants to put her on Crestor, but here are her numbers. Total cholesterol is 318. LDL is 206.
High. I will acknowledge that's high.
LDL is 206.
Very high.
HDL is 87.
Quite high, which could compensate. Yeah.
Yeah. And triglycerides are 113.
Okay.
Yeah.
So should she go on a statin or not? We're on the radio here, and I mean we're on the podcast here. We got to render a verdict. Yes or no?
Well, we would have some questions first.
No. We can't answer her?
No.
Oh, what good are we?
Well, Dr. Hoffman, we want to see a VAPS test.
But wait a minute, that cholesterol is so high.
Oh, but that cholesterol is
scary.
So high, you better go on Crestor right away, said her doctor.
Yeah.
Well, and she doesn't want that. She wants to avoid the side effects.
Right.
And she's wondering what else she could take.
Right.
To do this.
So hang tight.
We
have the question that really should be asked before we decide how to lower the LDL is, should we lower the LDL?
Yes.
That really is the question that needs to be asked. Now, some listeners might say, of course you need to lower the LDL. That's a sky-high number. That's bound to cause cardiovascular disease. And it is true that individuals with high LDL can, under some circumstances, be more likely to have cardiovascular disease. It is a marker of cardiovascular risk, but it doesn't necessarily lead to cardiovascular risk, because I wish I had a buck for every woman, especially, and especially older women in their 60s, 70s, even 80s, who have very high cholesterol in our practice, and you know several of them because we follow them together, who have no cardiovascular risk or minimal cardiovascular risk. And we've proven that. And how do we do that? You know the answer.
Well, the VAPS or the NMR test, the EBT heart scan.
Yep.
To see what's happening.
Because if you have a high cholesterol and a high LDL in particular, and you have zero coronary artery plaque, what good is a statin going to do you? Now, you know, age plays a role here. I mean, if this woman is like, 25 or something like that, you know, maybe you might say, well, at least theoretically, she's going to have 50 years of exposure to very high LDL. And maybe something's wrong with her metabolism, so on some wing and a prayer, you might get some protection. But that's not actually been really well documented, especially in women with high cholesterol. There's a little more evidence that there's a preventive value to lowering LDL cholesterol in middle-aged men. And that's called primary versus secondary prevention.
Yes.
So primary prevention means that you want to
prevent any cardiovascular events in somebody who's not had any has no evidence of disease.
And I think there really is legitimate debate about the efficacy of statins altogether in primary prevention. I think there's fairly well established that if you've had a heart attack or if you've had a stent bypass surgery, that you pretty much should be on a statin, because they're statistically, I mean, you got to look at the studies. There really is some significant reduction in subsequent events.
Yes. So, it can reduce the inflammation. This is true.
Yeah. And it works not just by lowering cholesterol. It works in other ways. So we would need to do a bit of a consultation to find out.
You know? Yeah.
And
In the meantime, I would advise Deb. I'm looking at her triglycerides now.
Let's assume that she should lower her LDL. Let's assume she
needs. Not terrible at 113.
Yep.
If she lowered her carbs, if those triglycerides came under 80, you're really lowering a very big risk factor right there.
And correspondingly, just mathematically, you will reduce the non-HDL cholesterol when you lower triglycerides. The equation is: say your triglycerides are, just pick a number, 500, and if you lower them to 100, you're going to lower your non-HDL cholesterol by 40 points. It's one-fifth of your triglycerides. I'm sorry, by 80 points in this case.
About 80 points. Okay.
If you lower it 400 points, you're going to lower it one-fifth is 80. So
By lowering triglycerides on a lower carb diet, she will effectively help the LDL, if not lower the number. Those small, dense LDL particles will become big, flat, big, fluffy, more desirable, right. Less atherogenic.
This is another good point that you're making. It's another way that we can materially impact the risk that LDL poses is by not lowering the LDL, but by changing the character of the LDL.
Yes.
So, you know, there are people who have LDL of 200 who don't have cardiovascular disease. There are people who have LDL of, 70, and they have cardiovascular disease. And that's the nature of the particles. The large fluffy particles, as you say, are more benign, and the small dense particles.
The pattern A particles.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So even without changing the number of the LDL, we can change the character of the LDL through diet, through exercise, through certain supplements.
Mm-hmm.
What supplements might we use to, I think it's a little bit of a marketing gimmick that, just as there is Viagra and a lot of men are, they think it's too expensive or they don't want to take a drug. They're afraid to, so they want to take a natural Viagra. So then there are all these companies that come up with so-called natural Viagra. And similarly, there's some people who are, and rightfully so, they mistrust the pharmaceutical industry. They want to try something natural. So they want to try a natural cholesterol lower. So they'll use red yeast rice or they'll use bergamot or something like that. And I always say, hey, if you really, really, really need to lower your cholesterol, take a damn statin because at least you know what you're getting.
Right. But the things like, taking a fish oil, taking panethene, taking bergamot, all of these are helpful.
Yes.
Along with changes in diet. We would go even further with something like chiolic.
Yes. Which doesn't necessarily lower cholesterol, but it actually keeps the arteries clear. Vitamin K2, MK7.
Yes.
These are protective of the coronary arteries along with things like olive leaf extract and resveratrol, fish oil,
vitamin
obviously.
Vitamin C, only because of the hypothesis that coronary artery disease may be the result of very low-grade scurvy.
Right. There you go.
Interesting.
Yeah. That there's, atherosclerosis associated with vitamin C deficiency, and you can protect the arteries. Pycnogenol for circulation, and, there's a variety of things. Okay.
You know what else comes to mind, Dr. Hoffman, speaking of this and coronary artery disease? What struck me at the last conference that we were at, the Integrative Healthcare Symposium, I forget the name of the lecture, but he talked about coronary artery disease as being part of an autoimmune condition, and to look for certain antibodies called anti-actin antibodies.
Oh, okay.
I thought that was phenomenally interesting, saying, wow, is this a test we should do now? Look for anti-actin antibodies that maybe...
Or even, we mentioned in connection with eggs, TMAO, the treatment for that is, reducing the intake of choline, which paradoxically may be protective against cardiovascular disease. We have every reason to believe that, the old-fashioned lecithin used to be given for cardiovascular protection. There are many, many dimensions to this. And in the future, one of the things we're going to get into is genetic testing for cardiovascular disease. And that actually can lead us, you may say, well, great, now I know I'm really screwed. I've got high risk for cardiovascular disease.
Yeah.
You know, now, do I really want to know that? Well, actually, if you have a certain pattern, it may point us to certain nutritional strategies versus others. There may be a small subset of people who may do better with a low-fat diet. There may be and probably a much larger cohort of people who are very carb-sensitive, and we can pick that up via genetic testing.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's what we call the science of nutrigenomics, and it's coming along.
Yes.
I've looked at this over the past few years. We've felt, it's not yet ready for prime time. It's subjecting our patients to inordinate expense unnecessarily for conclusions that are dubious, like 23andMe. It's like, great, okay. 23andMe says I'm supposed to be very likely to go bald. Last time you saw me in the office, about 24 hours ago, that hasn't happened.
Right.
So, the genetic testing, I think, can show us certain pathways that people need to pay attention to. There's homocysteine, yeah. There's LP little A. There are many pathways that contribute to risk. So and I'm sorry for a really long, it's a long-winded action. It's like this poor woman is saying,
yeah.
Would you please just tell me how to lower my LDL? Yeah. I didn't need a 15-minute discussion.
Without going into a dissertation.
Yeah, right.
But I do want to just say one more thing about genetic testing before you break for the sponsor, Dr. Hoffman,
yeah.
is that this is indeed personalized medicine, that true N of one.
Right.
Because it's not about what's good for a population. It's what's good for the individual. Because that often, whatever is good for a population does not necessarily translate to what's good for the individual. And this would be the ultimate personalized medicine. I look forward to having that kind of testing available.
Yeah. No, it's going to be something we're going to roll out in 2019. Yeah. All right. Thanks for cueing me. Let's allow one of our sponsors to share this important message with you. Here goes. This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by ProPax with NT Factor, a complete vitamin and mineral formula. NT Factor is the only nutritional formula clinically proven to reduce fatigue, whatever the cause, whether it be age, illness, or just being run down. NT Factor repairs damaged cells, restores healthy bacteria in your digestive tract. Clinical trials have shown NT Factor reduces fatigue by almost half, and it even reverses some symptoms of aging. I've been taking NT Factor for years, and now the 45-day money-back guarantee, you have nothing to lose. To order, call 800-982-9158, that's 800-982-9158, or go to ntfactor.com, that's ntfactor.com. Thanks for listening, and thanks for supporting our sponsors. They're what make Intelligent Medicine a continuing free resource to you. And now back to our questions with Layla. What's next?
We have from Geraldine. Hi, Dr. Hoffman. I enjoy your interviews. Have followed along with Anne Louise Gittleman over the years.
Okay.
You've interviewed her quite a bit over the years, Dr. Hoffman.
Yep.
I know. Question from your conversation. She mentioned taking 3 grams of glycine at night and enjoyed the best sleep in a long time.
Yep.
But then she said she took 7 grams in the morning. How is it that it doesn't have sleep-inducing effects then? And how much glycine should I be taking? Gee, I don't... Maybe Geraldine misheard during your podcast with Anne Louise Gittleman about taking glycine in the morning. I can't understand why anybody would take any glycine in the morning.
Okay, well, I'm reading from Anne Louise. You know, I just Googled Anne Louise Gittleman glycine. And here's, I want to say it in her own words, because I'm a fan of glycine for sleep.
Mm-hmm.
The product we use is called Glysom. It's made by Ajinomoto. And it does help a certain percentage of people sleep better. And how it works is interesting. It seems to work in a different
lower
way than
the
many
core
sleep.
Temperature. Yeah.
It works on core temperature. Can you tell us about that?
Yes. Yes. And I really love this mechanism of action. And this is how I explain it often. You know, bears hibernate for the winter. How do they stay asleep all winter long? Their core temperature goes down. Well, when we go to bed every night, our core temperature comes down too. That's how we stay asleep. That's how Glysom works, is it keeps the core temperature lower so that you stay sleeping. That's how it works.
Okay. So she writes, Anne Louise, at her website, annelouise.com, glycine is the best kept secret when it comes to brain health. Glycine is an amino acid and a neurotransmitter. During depression, glycine levels have been found to be low, while taurine levels are high. Glycine is present in high amounts in whey protein powder and bone broth. Natural grass-fed gelatin is also high in glycine because it's actually, a hoof. It's one of those nutrients along with what else is in there? Proline, glycine, proline. Those are the amino acids that are in broth and in gelatin. And she says, when supplementing, I recommend 2 to 3,000 milligrams of glycine in the form. Oh, she says she likes trimethylglycine. Well, that's a little different. TMG
is
betaine.
Okay.
That has an effect on methylation.
Yes.
I don't know. I don't know.
Mm. Interesting.
Glycine and trimethylglycine are different. Trimethylglycine is thought to help with methylation. It'll help to get homocysteine down.
Right. Along with B6, B12, folate.
Right.
Methylfolate, which is particularly helpful. So that could be something. So that's interesting. Glycine, the body does make small amounts of glycine, certainly not enough to have a therapeutic effect.
It's not an essential amino acid?
It's not an essential amino acid.
Okay. The body makes it. So, okay.
Body makes some. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But taking glycine is wonderful to help keep you staying asleep. And the time to take it is around bedtime or shortly before bedtime, not in the middle of the night when you've woken up.
Right. Because, the distinction that glycine has among all the sleep things, like a lot of the sleep things put you to sleep and then you can wake up later. Just like sleeping pills. That's the problem with sleeping pills is they don't have a sustained effect. You know, they'll knock you out, but then you'll wake up in the middle of the night. So what are you going to do at 4:30 in the morning? You wake up and you got to, you know, be getting ready to shower and go to work at 6:30 or 7. You don't want to take a sleeping pill. You don't even want to take valerian or, you know, something that's going to knock you out. But glycine helps to sustain sleep. That's the way it seems to work.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It's very well doing
but
that.
But I'm not sure why to take it in the morning. Maybe she wants you to take the TMG in the morning, which could make sense.
That makes sense.
But yeah. By the way, taking glycine, I mean, you could take glycine, like massive amounts of it in the daytime. It's not going to make you fall asleep at the wheel or drowsy or, you know,
uncoordinated. Yeah, no, it wouldn't do that.
Right.
Yeah. No, it's not a sedative.
No, it's not.
It's not a sedative.
Right.
It's not a melatonin. It's not a valerian. It's not a German chamomile or anything like that.
Right.
Okay.
Time for one
quick
question.
Well, Geraldine, thank you for that question.
Got one in the mailbag.
Okay. We have here, here's an interesting one. We have a note from Michelle about VSL versus Visbiome.
Yes.
VSL no longer exists. As the original doctor who formulated it took the company to court,
who
was making it here under false pretenses and fooling the public and all of that. And a Maryland federal jury unanimously finds probiotic sellers, the makers of VSL, liable for false advertising and awards the product inventor more than $18 million in damages.
That's
so
a
the
big,
real product
that's a big
is
settlement.
Visbiome.
Wow.
I mean,
that's a big judgment. It's not even a settlement. It's a judgment.
Yeah.
Wow. So VSL number 3 is something that we've talked about for a long time as the probiotic that seems to be best tested for inflammatory bowel disease, ulcerative colitis, and Crohn's disease. And there are actually some small studies. Mm-hmm. Now, the problem is that the name seems to have been appropriated by some big companies that then proceeded to market it to a very big constituency of really dedicated probiotic takers, you know, people with ulcerative colitis and Crohn's disease and the belief that this was going to help them. And the intellectual property and the invention was under the name of a product called Visbiome.
Mm-hmm.
And what's the name of the guy? There's a guy.
His name is Claudio De Simone. He's the inventor.
He's the inventor. So they, you know, and I get it. You know, he developed it. Then they took it, and he got no credit for it. That's what you call in a law case. It's a slam dunk. You know, they stole
appropriation of intellectual property.
Right. Bingo.
Misappropriation of intellectual property. Yes.
So I want to just provide a shout out is that I looked for VSL number 3 on the internet. It's still being sold. Maybe they're just selling down their inventory or something like that. But I'm not even sure they can make it under that name anymore. It's a great brand, but the brand has been tainted by this charge of expropriation of intellectual property. And now, if you want to order it, there's a professional. There's a website at visbiome.com, right?
Mm-hmm.
Visbiome.com. And so please check it out. And actually, I think there's a section for health professionals. It's a medical food.
Yeah.
And it's you can get it in regular strength or extra strength. And I recommend for patients who have ulcerative colitis and Crohn's disease, we want to try it. They start with the Visbiome extra strength. But I think it's a powder, and I think you could start with small amounts of it and then work up gradually. But that's the one where the studies have been done.
Mm. Yeah. This is quite a thing. And this happened last November, I believe, is when this judgment came down for Claudio DeSimone. Yeah.
Well, I hope that, I mean, $18 million goes some ways to restitution, I would say.
Yeah.
But I hope then that people are not misled and that they, you know, really, I think it's appropriate that people reward the actual innovator of this. In terms of the pipeline of studies, I'm just going to share this with you, that there are studies underway in HIV, in Gulf War illness, in autism spectrum disorders. Ohio State University Autism Treatment Network are undertaking a double-blind placebo-controlled crossover trial of Visbiome. And even in cirrhosis of the liver, because we know the liver takes a beating from a disordered microbiome. So they're actually going to, you know, so they're, you know, legit company. They're doing the research. They're sponsoring studies to prove the efficacy of this probiotic in a variety of conditions. So, yeah, good. Yep.
Okay.
That's the story.
All right. We have.
Oh, no. Whoa. We're into the second part of our discussion, so we're going to have to sign off.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, time flies, Dr. Hoffman.
Okay.
Oh, my.
Yeah. So save that question for next week. Give us a preview of what that's going to be.
It's actually about bloodless surgery.
Okay.
Somebody has sent a video about blood transfusion alternative strategies and would like you to comment on.
It's not like psychic surgery or something.
No.
It's like, I want you to comment on
bloodless surgery.
Because there's a guy in Brazil who, he lays hands on you and then he removes your organs, you know, without any, you know, anesthesia. There's even an incision. They just come out bloody innards in his hands and then he throws away whatever's bothering you. No, that's not that type of surgery.
Oh, no, misappropriation of organs.
Yeah. I think that guy.
That sounds awful.
That guy was exposed as a fraud. You know. All right. Thanks for listening, folks. And we'll be back next week with more questions. Radio program at AOL.com is the destination for our weekly Q&A with Layla for questions. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.
This is Layla Mudin, RD. I see patients regularly, along with Dr. Hoffman. If you require a nutrition consult with me but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.